It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, brought to you in part by McConnell Buick GMC. Captain Mike Ward, how are you,
yes,
sir?
Yes, sir, boss man. How you doing today?
Boss man, boss man me.
You're the boss man.
Don't boss
here.
Man, but yeah, at this radio station, that's about it.
Yeah, I ain't talking about home.
At home,
I'm talking
I get
about
demoted.
Here at the station.
Yeah, at home, I get way demoted on that. Yeah, a lot to do today.
I think you're a hay boy there, aren't you?
Yeah, something like that. I got a lot to talk about on the deer world on today's show. By the way, just keeping score here, I'm finished. Planting.
Yeah, me too.
I'm never there's stuff I want to do, but I'm finished. It's put to bed. You're put to bed too?
I'm done. Only thing I got to do, I'm waiting on the grass to come up. I like for it to get 6-8 inches.
That's God's job. Oh, yeah. Then you got to fertilize.
Fertilize, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that's it.
Yeah, two of it. It's a weird feeling.
Yeah, and I did the throw and mow.
Right. I have corrupted Mike Ward. He's come to my side of throw and mow, so we're going to get some pictures from his place and judge that as well. I did all but two.
Yeah.
All but two of our fields throw and mow. There's two that I'm still trying to get leveled out right. But other than that, yeah, we're all.
And with all the rain we had this past week, whew,
got put in the place.
It'll be good.
Yeah. But, you know, as we talk about planting and that here in our neck of the woods, elsewhere, the Midwest, Northeast, we're looking at the peak of rut coming very soon.
They're starting a rut anyway.
Yeah, and when we do that, I think about what goes on in the Midwest. I think about our friend Casey Schutman from the Management Advantage right there in the heart of big buck and tight rut country. He joins us now. Casey, how are you, man?
I'm doing well, guys. How about you?
Good. I mean, but you should be. I mean, are there deer standing in your front yard right now? Bucks chasing through the backyard? What's going on?
It's still a little bit early. I'm actually stuck in the office all day today. It's been raining. It started raining about midnight last night. It's supposed to rain the rest of the day. I'm actually driving down the road right now.
See, he's scouting.
Got pulled out of the office a little bit. But, late October can be really good. You know, here when we get some weather front.
And where's here, Casey?
I am in West Central Illinois, just above Quincy. So everybody hears about the Golden Triangle, you know, Adams, Pike, and Brown County. I am in Adams and Hancock County.
Okay, you're in the midst of all of it.
Yeah, we've got some nice deer. It's typically fairly good.
I want to break this down too. I always love just talking to you this time of year to hear stories about what's going on up there. And it is pre-rut. I mean, I look at these dates, and so somebody who's in the field there, is it November 7th? Is that the date? What is the date? What is the peak for this Midwest rut?
I mean, it happens at the same time every year, and there's been a million studies on it. You always have somebody getting on social media saying, on October 20th, oh, the rut's on, buck chasing does, you know. But, you know, typically I would say the peak breeding phase of our deer would be the November 8th through the 12th, right around in there, which is typically not necessarily the best time to be in the woods because a lot of times you'll have bucks that are locked down with does. And, you know, I've got trail cameras and cell cameras everywhere. And, you know, I might have a deer fairly regular the last part of October or the early part of November, and he may disappear for 4 or 5 days. Now, he may be off on his annual jaunt where he's running around like an idiot looking for does, or he's just got a doe bedded down and he stays with her while she's in her. So typically the best days for us would be, you know, from now until that November 8th time period. I think some people call it the buck parade is when it kind of starts to happen.
Yeah.
It just hasn't quite happened yet. You know, you hear people talk about it, the rut popping. It hasn't popped as of yet.
And I want to talk about that, though, that there's so many things to ask you here. But if somebody's coming from here, and Casey has dual citizenship, by the way, a lot of people don't know that, in Illinois and Alabama. He has dual citizenship. He's one of us as well, and knows about things down here, and we'll talk about that going forward here in this discussion. But if you're talking to somebody back here, if you and I are sitting on the tailgate, and I'm like, okay, Casey, I want to come up. I want to do this. I want to do a Midwest hunt. The best time would be maybe before that peak, right? I mean,
yeah, either before it or after it. I mean, you know, you've got the bell curve of whenever, you know, the does start to come into heat. And anytime that bell curve is on the rise, you know, that's whenever those bucks are going to be searching for that first doe to come in. Then you get to the top of it, which, like I said, is that November 8th to the 12th time period where there's, you know, 80% of our does are in heat. And all of those bucks may be locked down. You know, it's still going to be a good time to be in the woods because you never know what could happen. I mean, you could have a deer walk by that you've never seen in your life at that time. And then the back side of that bell curve. So, you know, really, November 18th through about Thanksgiving, you can kill some of the biggest deer in the country on the back side of it.
The back side?
Because they're looking for that last doe to come into heat.
Is that just a trailing element of that 8th through 12th rut, or is that a second estrus coming in for does that weren't bred in the first rut?
Some of them it possibly could be the second, you know, and some of them, like maybe your doe fawns, could be their first time coming into heat. But like I said, those bucks have been breeding every doe that they can since, you know, the start of it, and it gets to the back side of it, and they get a little bit frantic, I guess you could call it.
Okay.
Where they're just out looking for that last doe. And, you know, you can go in the woods, and it can be an extremely slow time of year on the back side of that, but you never know what's going to walk through. You know, typically your deer movement is going to be a little bit less just because a lot of your bucks are tired.
Mm-hmm.
But when I go back every year and look at my trail camera picture history, like leading into the season, I'll always go back into last year's pictures, the year before, maybe even the year before that, and I'll scroll through every one of them. And, you know, every year whenever I'm checking trail cameras or looking at cars, I save pretty much every buck picture that I have. So I can go back through and look at that. And every year when I go back through and look at that, you know, that November 18th to the 27th, I'll always have a set of pictures of a buck that I never knew was there.
Huh.
He may be from 3 or 4 or 5 miles away, and he was just making that pass through there. But it's always in a funnel. It's always in a pinch. So there's always, you know, bucks that are coming through that are searching for does. It's a key spot for that time of year. And I'll always, like I said, always have a picture of a deer that's 5, 6, or 7 years old that I'll never see again, but it's always in daylight, and it's usually 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, or 2 o'clock in the middle of the day.
Man, he's just out looking at it for the last of it.
But you may not see another deer that whole day you're there, but it's one of those times where, you, like I said, you can kill a super old age class deer because he's frantic. He's looking for that last doe to.
And this is, so this is interesting, as you know, people think about planning a trip, somebody from South Alabama here wanting to go get in on the rut. It's on both sides of the bell curve that's better than the top of the bell curve. Because you mentioned, you know, lockdown. I've talked to folks in the past that said, we got there just a day too late or 2 days too late. And they said they got there. The outfitter, whoever had been talking to them, said, man, it's on. And by the time they get there, there's like a 3 or 4, maybe, I don't know, you can correct how long, a days of lockdown. And by the time they pack up and leave and head back to Alabama, the guy calls them the next day and said, y'all should have stayed another day. They're back on their feet.
Yeah. And it also depends on your style of hunting and what kind of territory you're hunting in. If you're hunting around food, you know, when you get into that rut time frame, it can be pretty slim pickings around food just because the does are, you know, they get kind of nervous anyway whenever they come in to eat. They get nervous because they're getting, every time they step out in the open, they're getting chased by every buck that sees them or smells. So they typically go away from the food source. They go into hiding a little bit. But if you're hunting, you know, funnels, pinch points, getting tied in on a bedding area that you know there's a bunch of does that are bedding in there, you can have some pretty good action.
Do you have a rut in December at all where some of the does that don't get bred in November, that they come in heat in December and have some kind of a rut?
Yeah. So our first gun season comes in Illinois, like the third weekend in November, so it'd be the weekend before Thanksgiving.
And that's shotgun, season, right?
That's shot. It's a shotgun, right. Muzzleloader, or handgun.
Yeah.
And then our second gun season comes in the weekend after Thanksgiving, so it's usually that first weekend in December. And I'll be honest with you, I've never killed a deer during first gun season.
Wow.
And it usually always falls between November 18th and November 20th. I've never killed a deer in that time frame. I filmed my dad kill one last year on the last day of first gun season.
Okay, that's when that was?
Every buck that I've ever killed with a gun has always been in that second season. And I think it's just a lingering effect of, you know, a buck frantically looking for that last doe, or we get a really cold front and they're feeding back into that food. And, you know, you may be hunting over a cut cornfield or a food plot or something like that, and they're really tired and they need something to eat, and they come in there, they eat, and they may chase the doe around if they feel like.
All right, we're coming right back. More with Casey Shootman from the Management Advantage. We'll talk more about, of course, that show, my favorite, and what's going on in the Midwest right now with the rut when we return on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, our friend Casey Shootman, the Management Advantage, which before we get back to just picking his brain on Midwest rut, Management Advantage, people want to check out the program. How do they do it?
Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, all the social media sites. We post a video every 2 weeks. Basically, that's time sensitive to the time of year, whether it's management or hunting, pictures, whole nine yards.
And we're going to get into some of the Alabama, like I said, he has dual citizenship, so yep. Some of the Alabama stuff on there as well. All right, as we're talking about this, and it's kind of a learning experience, whether somebody's going to just say to heck with it and hump in the truck and try to make a hunt somewhere in the Midwest during the rut, or they're planning for the future, just some of the real, you know, because I think if somebody gets on the web, and you said, here's the, you know, the peak of the rut, and they go, okay, that's the peak of the rut. That's, I'm going to go for those. I got 4 days, and they're going to go the 8th through the, you know, the 12th. That may not be the best 4 days.
Yeah, I mean that time of year, it's just so hard to predict at that time of year, just because the deer are doing deer thing. You know, they're out trying to breed does. You could have the best hunt of your life, or you could sit there and look at squirrels all day long.
Well, I mean, we get this idea from here in Alabama, the way our rut's kind of drug out and spaced out different parts of the state and those things, versus the stories we hear about the Midwest and this when those days are there, that it's what 10, it could be 10 days of like berserk action. Is that fair?
Yeah. I mean, so go back into last year, leading into November. I think it was like October 29th to November 7th, one of the spots that I kind of try to key in on during the rut. It's a really good funnel in a big timber-type setting. Our weather, you know, everybody's like, oh, man, that, you know, that first week in November can be terrible if it turns off 70 degrees, which it happens almost every year. We get some extremely hot weather. Well, I said, heck with it. I'm not going to hunt in that. I don't want to sweat my... you know what, off. And my brother-in-law was building a house, so I was helping him build his house. And like on November 9th or 10th, we started to get some better weather. I went in there and hunted, seen quite a few deer, not the right one, but I pulled two camera cards on the way out that were on the main trails right there in that spot. And literally, October 29th through November 7th was highs of in the mid-70s, a couple days in the 80s with really high wind, which is typically not good for deer movement. But that October 29th to November 7th, I had a daylight picture every single day within 30 yards of that tree stand of a shooter buck.
You know, well, it goes back to the old saying, Casey, is if you have a day off and you go hunting, you go hunting. It doesn't matter whether it's 80 degrees or 20 degrees. If you have a day off, you go hunting. It's kind of like fishing down here. You know, everybody, well, let's see what the moon's doing, what the tide's doing. No, I'm going to go fishing when I have a day off and go fishing. I don't care what the tide's doing or the moon's doing.
Yes.
You just got to go.
I agree. And, I mean, that's kind of an exception to the rule. You know, some of my other spots that I had were just completely dead. The deer just weren't moving. But I had had to have been a unique scenario where there was just a lot of mature deer in one spot and limited amount of does, and they were just going nuts trying to find a doe. So, you know, it just the rut is kind of it's the lottery. Typically, I would rather hunt early season on a cold front in a pattern or late season on a cold front in a pattern. You know, those deer are much more predictable that time of year, but it's hard to not hunt the rut. You know, it's beautiful that time of year. You know, you've got – so our weather coming up for the next week, you know, we get past this front. Now I'm sitting in my truck on the edge of the interstate right now, so I'm with service, and it's mist and rain, and you can't hardly see 200 yards. So the deer aren't moving right now, but on the back side of this, we're going to have – highs in the 40s and 50s and lows, high 20s and low 30s, and it's going to be a exciting week, I hope, as long as I pick the right spot. But we'll see.
Well, okay, we're talking weather here, too, and it may seem like a dumb question, but, I mean, for folks that have not been outside of Alabama maybe hunting, and you having dual citizenship can speak to this, you know, big deal. We get a cold front come through in high pressure in Alabama. We're going, you know, it gets deer on their feet. Although, right before the rain, gets deer. Is it the same? Is it exactly the same in Illinois or elsewhere in the Midwest?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's 100% the same. I mean, you can kind of correlate it to some apps out there that predict deer movement. It's pretty well spot on. You know, you get, you know, post-front with a consistent wind, a little higher wind. I mean, everybody, you know, nobody likes to hunt in the wind, but for here, you know, a 10 to 15 mile an hour wind is normal. And honestly, I would rather have that 10 to 15 mile an hour wind because it helps with your access and your walk out and while you're hunting, you know, it's flipping into a spot, trying not to spook deer. That wind actually, it helps, and the deer just move better. And, you know, we get a dead calm day where the wind's just kind of floating around light and variable. It's not good for the hunter, especially if you're a bow hunter, because you're trying to get a deer within 30 or 40 yards.
Yeah.
But the deer know it too, and they just don't move.
You sound just like Mike Ward said that, a man here said that for a long time. You'd rather have a little bit more wind because it's consistent.
Yes. Give me 10, 15 mile an hour wind all day long over calm winds. Absolutely. Exactly. All day long. Especially if it's just coming out of one direction, it's not moving around.
But usually, if you have a substantial wind, it's consistent.
Normally, yeah.
I think we actually had this conversation last year. One of the stands that I actually killed a deer out of it last year, and I think we've killed five bucks out of it the last 5 years, between me and my dad and my brother. I don't go in there unless we have a 10 to 15 mile an hour wind. And last year when I went in there, I slipped in there in the morning. We had a 10 to 12 mile an hour wind before daylight, so I could walk in without anything hearing me.
Yep.
Slipped in the stand, got all my camera gear set up, and it right at daylight, the deer that I was trying to kill stood up at 30 yards.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Never heard you.
163-inch deer, and I drew on him. I could have killed him. And that was one of very few times that I've ever had a camera save a deer's life, but I let him walk off.
Yep, I remember this. And we both, Mike and I, fell out and said, to heck with the camera, Casey, kill the deer.
I know.
We can take pictures afterwards.
I know it, but whenever you're out there to video a deer, I know what you got to do. And it's just one of those things. I let him walk, and I think the next morning the neighbor killed him. But that was the second time that I'd let that specific deer walk off. The first time, he was at like 52 yards, and I just didn't feel comfortable shooting at a deer that far. A whitetail, anyway. I've killed mule deer that distance or farther. But and I'm 100% confident with a bow at 50 yards. But whitetail, they can be ninjas.
Yep.
And, they like to duck arrows.
Yep, so. They can squat quick.
Just a side note here, discussion amongst us. Are they ducking there? Because, I mean, that's what I called it my whole life. But I heard somebody get in a discussion maybe a couple years ago that actually what's happening is that deer's turning to run, right? And as they turn to run, they're going to drop their body to be able to pivot and run. It's not like I'm ducking it. It's, hey, I'm running, and this is what my body does. I've hit a deer wrong because of that. They turned, and I've had had a deer turn into it, too.
Yeah, it's just instinct. It'd be like in your house in the middle of the night and somebody claps their hands behind you, you're going to flinch.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So they hear the bow going off. I think they hear the arrow coming. Some of the veins make a lot of noise. So you just got to be mindful of the deer's attitude at the time and if he's alert, if you had to stop him, or if he's just feeding her, if he's chasing a doe. I mean, I've had bucks chasing does, and you shoot at them at 40 yards and they don't even flinch. Like,
right.
Arrow runs through them and they're just standing around like, what just happened?
Yep.
And they walk 30 yards and fall over dead. So, you got to be, you got to pay a lot of attention to the specific scenario. So
talk about what you're doing Midwest hunting too on calling, we talked about it in Alabama. It can be effective. I like to call pre-rut. I like to call in the cruising phase, but not a ton. But we watch, down here in Alabama, we're watching videos of people hunting in the Midwest, and the calling seems to work like nothing I've ever seen in Alabama.
It works extremely well. It's another one of those things, you got to read the deer's body language at the time. But if I see a deer, if I get eyes and get a visual on a deer that I have as a labeled as a target, first thing I'm probably going to do is snort wheeze at him. Because typically that's going to be a 5 or 6 or 7 year old deer that's going to have a really bad attitude. Depending on wind direction, I may direct it one way or the other to try to get him to come upwind of me, because they're always going to try to circle downwind of that. So I may, if he's in a spot where I feel like if I call to him at the time, if I feel like he can get downwind of me without me getting a shot at him, I may wait and let him walk to a spot where he can get, where he's to a spot where if I call to him, there's no possible way he can get downwind of me before I can get a shot at him. I'll carry a grunt call too and maybe grunt at a deer. I'll rattle a little bit, not a lot. I've had a lot of deer that just didn't respond to that, right away. Sometimes they'll come running into it. You just never know. But I would say the highest percentage call for me is a snort wheeze with just natural mouth calling.
Come back for the break. I want to talk more about that with Casey, because that's something that you look at the number, just look at the stores in Alabama, let alone what we have in our trucks and in our backpacks. A lot more grunt calls than snort wheeze. Right? Or doing it with your voice. Talk about that when we come back. This is FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Remember, you check us out on Facebook as well. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Put the outdoors on there because we got the FM Talk Facebook page, but this stuff's on the outdoors page. So go there and give us a... Send us one of your pictures. By the way, you're still snapper fishing too. I saw some big pictures this last week before the front came through. People went out, I guess that was Monday, went out and caught some... They might have been teasing too, because I saw the ships in the background.
Yeah,
they might have come in there taking the picture there, but there's some fine snapper.
Let me tell you what, they're making a lot of money because That gas is expensive to go out in that.
It is.
Right,
I'm going to next snapper trip on tank it. It's going to look like I'm getting refugees out of Haiti or something like that. The number of people I'm going to put on the boat to pay for gas.
But that's right.
We continue our conversation about hunting and hunting in the Midwest with our friend Casey Shootman, the Management Advantage. Check him out on social media platforms. I watch the shows on YouTube as well. And when we went to the break there, Casey said something that in Alabama people said, "What? You lead with a snort wheeze."
If it's a deer that I'm targeting, like I will typically never call to a deer if I know I'm not going to try to shoot it.
Right.
I just don't want to educate deer. And typically those younger age class deer that we're not targeting, they won't react well to a snort wheeze because it's a challenge. But if it's a deer, like I said, that we're targeting that's 5, 6, 7 years old, they're usually pretty bad attitude.
Right.
Actually, one of the deer that I'm trying to kill right now, he's probably the meanest deer that I've ever seen or ever had pictures of. Not a big deer at all, antler-wise, but he's 5 or 6 years old. And every trail camera video or picture I have of him, he has his ears laid back.
Yeah.
He's walking, and he's like walking behind another buck, or he's walking him in circles trying to whoop their butt.
Yeah.
So typically, if I can call to a deer of that age class, with a snort wheeze, they will turn inside out. Sometimes it can be a delayed reaction. Like they'll snap their head and look at you, and they may stand there for, 2 or 3 or 4 minutes. But if you notice, he'll start to change his body language. He'll bristle his hair up. He'll slick his ears back. He'll start licking his lips. And he will walk stiff-legged straight to the tree normally.
So he had to think about it for a second, though. So he heard it, he stood there, he thought about it, and then said, oh, hell no.
I don't know if he's saying that. I think he's probably talking to himself and beating his chest, saying, "You can do this. I'm going to go over there and whoop his butt." it's hard to read a deer's mind, but you can watch their attitude totally change. They'll either react positively to it, or they'll just keep walking. Sometimes you can't. If he's following a doe, sometimes he wants to have a little loving more than mm-hmm. he wants to get in a fight. You just never know. But if you catch that deer cruising by himself, and typically, every scenario is different, but, like I said, I'll either try to wait until I know that after I call to that deer that he can't get downwind to me, or, it's also mindful to think about. So if you're calling to that deer, make sure that he can't see where that call is coming from. If you're in a tree that's out in the wide open and he's standing 100 yards from me and he can see everything, he's most likely not going to come.
Right.
He can't see a deer. But if you're in a spot where maybe he's down in a creek or he's just over a rise or he's around an edge, that he has to come to that spot to see if there's an actual deer standing there, that's when it's the most successful.
Sounds like we're talking about turkey hunting, Mike. Same thing we tell folks talking about turkeys.
But there's a big difference between hunting out west and hunting around here. I mean, yeah, our grunt calls and stuff.
Well, that's what I want to ask. Do you think
it works around here some, and it does work a little bit. But out west, it works.
I want to talk to Casey about this because, once again, dual citizenship, Illinois and Alabama. If you had a 6-year-old deer here, do you think he'd get that same reaction from snort wheeze?
In the right setting, absolutely. I mean, that's the most natural call there is. Just those deer hear that probably on a daily basis. And it speaks to them in a way that I feel like causes the best reaction to me.
I'm just trying to think if I've heard a buck in Alabama snort wheeze. I think I have. I think I have maybe once or maybe twice. But, I mean, grunting, I hear all the time, grunting. I mean, that's just all the time.
And let's talk about that for a second on grunt calls, too. You go on YouTube and, watch a video and somebody hears the different grunt cadences. But, that kind of short grunting, that bat, 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 versus the whole, there's like a, some people go bat, bat, bat. But what I hear is that kind of short, almost like hogs grunting a little bit, that kind of pacing. I mean, Casey, what do you think?
Oh, yeah. Yep. I mean,
do you ever hear that long bah versus?
I've heard it a time or two. It's not something I hear all the time, but I mean, we're not in the woods.
True.
You know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You know, it's kind of like bobcats. You know, there's a whole bunch of them out there, but you just rarely ever see them just because they're so sneaky and fly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If you were able to ride on a deer's back on a daily basis, you would probably hear a snortweed every day.
Yeah,
good point. Yeah, so snortweed is what you lead with. Let's talk about also, and you mentioned, and people think about this. This is true in Alabama too. Make sure if you're calling to a deer that there's some way that deer couldn't see. You know, just like turkey hunting, y'all don't call to one where the gobbler can go, there's not a turkey there.
Yeah, in the middle of a field.
Right.
Yeah.
Beyond that, scent wise, do you use scents? Do you use lure scents? We're not talking trapping, although we'll do that on a future show. But for deer.
The only thing that I'll typically use, so I carry an Ozonix with me. I've had really good success with that. As long as you have a consistent wind, you know, if you've got wind floating around all over the place, there's really no way that you can make it work. But I've had good success with that, and I'll, you know, there's, of course, scent crusher products that you can put your clothes into. I don't have a scent crusher. I'm kind of cheap. I just take my Ozonix unit and throw it in a tote and turn my Ozonix unit on to try to, you know, de-scent my clothes, because that's fairly important. I'll put my boots in there as well. And I rarely have a deer, you know, like smell where I've walked. What I'll pair with that is there's a product called Evercalm.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it advertised. I'm not familiar. So what does it do?
It's not a doe and estrus or anything like that. I think they make one that's a doe and estrus one. But this is just smells like a deer. So like when I get up in the tree, I'll just rub it on the tree, you know, where the wind's, you know, matching my body, and it just makes you smell like a deer and kind of maybe hides a little bit of your scent. I've had deer get downwind of me and throw their nose in the air and sniff around for a little bit and flick their tail and just keep walking. It just depends on the day, depends on the weather conditions. I think deer can smell better with different humidities and moisture in the air and heavy air and barometric pressure. There's a lot of factors that go into it. I think at any point in time, if you have a deer get downwind of you, you're at a risk of the deer smelling you. So I obviously try to play the wind every time I hunt. There's never a single time where I say, heck with the wind, I'm just going to go hunt. And you can't do that. Eventually a deer is going to smell you, and if it's the deer you're after, you may never see him again.
And by the way, the scenting conditions just adds, you know, ask any of us to run bird dogs, pointers and stuff, some days they smell better than others. Certain conditions, humidity, all that. I think that's absolutely true. But when you go out, let's say, because that's what's been always my question, not with like, well, like a doe and estrus, you got to walk to the point, like you're going to put the doe and estrus out, and you had to walk to the point, you know, so if you're not covered completely scent-wise, you've now left your scent signature there where you put the doe and estrus out. It's always bothered me about that. I'd rather just not ever get near there.
Yeah, I don't want a deer to know I'm in the world. I mean, they're used to smelling other deer on a daily basis. So, like, that Evercalm stuff, it just smells like a deer. I'll wipe that on the tree, and like I said, if he gets downwind of me, hopefully he just smells deer and not me.
You're putting that on the tree. You're saying you're putting it on the tree you're in versus, like, you know, growing up using doe and heat, you're going to walk. Yeah. I'm going to walk out there 80 yards, right? I can see this place here in this bottom or something, and I want this. I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to have this scent blow into the bedding area, and then he's going to come out to check it out. But now I've left my scent right where it's impossible to put it there and not have my scent blowing in the same direction that the stuff I'm putting out is.
Yeah, and like people will like squirt, you know, deer pee on their boots, or they'll carry in a drag rag. I never do that because I'm always approaching my set from downwind. And I don't want deer walking in on the downwind side of me, and I don't want it to be dragging it around in front of the stand where, like you said, if you're not scent free, you know, I don't want a deer walking in my track.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're just adding an element to the hunt that that can be avoided just if you use your head a little bit.
You know? Problem is, Casey, back here in your other home state of Alabama, the deer come from every they come from every direction.
I know. Yeah. And sometimes I probably overthink it, and I'm probably a too cautious of a hunter. But you know, I'm hunting small tracks that are right here around my house, and I have to make them last the whole season. And if I go in there and blow them up for a week straight and do things wrong, or what I think is wrong, you end up making the hunt worse throughout the season, and you can watch your sightings go downhill fairly quick. Because deer don't want to put up with a lot of that stuff, especially a mature deer.
Especially a mature deer.
In the last the last 10 years, it's worked extremely well. You know, I try to stretch that. You know, I'm not the guy that has the 4 or 5 days to go on a hunt. If I only had 4 or 5 days, maybe I would be a little more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I'm hunting small tracks that I'm making last from October to, late December. So I tend to be on the more cautious side.
Yeah. You know, Tracy, one call that I've only heard one time in my life, and I was in Canada. And I don't know whether you've ever heard it or not, but that a deer makes. And it sounds like a woodpecker. I mean, it's a – I don't know whether it's
really?
A clicking noise.
Yes, yeah. A real clicking – click. I can't do it with my mouth, but it's a real clicking noise.
And I've never heard this.
Well, and Quaker Boy has got a video, and it's an older video. It must be 25 years old. But it was on there. And that's the only other time I've ever seen it. But it was a big buck, both of them, the one that was on Quaker Boy video and the one that I saw. I kept hearing this noise. I was hunting in Canada, and I kept hearing this noise. I'm like, what is that? It's a loud noise, and it sounds like a woodpecker or something. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, this buck comes across shooting. I wasn't even prepared because I was kind of looking around, what in the world is that noise? And all of a sudden, this big buck comes across shooting lane, and by the time I got my gun up, he got by me, but he came right to the right of my shooting house that I was in, and I couldn't shoot. I didn't have the window open. There was a window that I started to shoot through the window. But he sat over there and made that noise. I never heard it before, never heard it since, besides that one video that have you ever heard that?
I have heard it two or three times in my life, and every time I heard it, it was a buck that was within 10 feet of a doe's behind.
Huh.
He was so close to letting him breed that it was, and then the deer were like almost like right underneath of me, and I was really close to him, and it wasn't that loud like you're saying. It was just a real soft, like,
no, like this was loud, was like a
– I've never heard – y'all are killing me. I've never heard any of this.
It was like a giant woodpecker. But it was a calm afternoon, late in the afternoon, and it was just super loud. I just couldn't figure out what in the world that was. And, it's just weird.
Yeah, it would – if you ever get a chance to see, like, it happens here. I don't know if it happens as much down there just because the buck-to-doe ratios are a little different. And our rut is so tight that these deer just go out of their minds when it's right. But I've been lucky enough to see a couple scenarios where there's one doe and like 7 bucks behind her.
Oh my gosh!
there's noises that deer make that you never knew they could make. Whenever you get that tight of a competition and that intense of a scenario, it's mind blowing what you'll see. And some of it can be disturbing. It's crazy what'll happen, but it's a savage world we live in.
Man, I've told Sean this story before. I was sitting in a bean field one time, and there was a buck tending a doe out there, and there was deer came from every direction, downwind, upwind, sidewind, everything to that doe and estrus that was in that bean field that they couldn't have seen till they came out of the woods. I don't know if they were making some kind of noise that I couldn't hear, but there were bucks come from every direction to that doe. I'd never seen nothing like that before. And like you say, he was probably making some kind of noise I couldn't hear, but the other bucks must have been able to hear.
Yeah, they're just circling like sharks waiting for their turn.
That's right. That's right.
I'm serious. Like, so there's been several studies done where, like up here we'll have, doves will have twins a lot, and there was a high percentage of those fawns that had different fathers.
Yeah, how about that?
And I've actually watched it, like, where a mature deer will breed a doe, and they'll stand around for a minute, and then he's like, all right. And he'll go off to the next doe to try to find one, and there'll be a year-and-a-half-old buck that's standing there 50 yards away, and as soon as the older deer leaves, he comes in, breeds the doe, and it might happen three or four times again before she goes out of heat. You know, those bucks don't care if another buck just bred her.
Yeah,
it's the animal world.
That's right.
She still smells like she's ready, and if she stands still, they're going to do their part.
Hey, we're coming right back, and we'll wrap it up. Our guest, Casey Shoopman, The Management Advantage, talking about what's going on right now in the Midwest and what we can expect for our run coming up. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, and wrapping it up with our buddy Casey Shoopman for now from the Management Advantage, although we're waiting for next. You feel good. This next week or so, we're going to get a deer story out of you, right? That's a little pressure on you?
Man, I hope so.
Give me what is...
I'm right now.
What do you want? What's the biggest buck you're watching right now on camera that you think's in the area?
Maybe pushing 170.
I mean, a buck of a lifetime for most people.
I actually passed the deer the last day of the season last year. This year, but January. I think it was January 17th was our last day of our bow season. And he'd been coming to a food plot pretty regular, and I went in there just to shoot a doe. And of course, he comes out with a bunch of other smaller bucks. But he was. Right close to 170 last year, and I thought he was a four-year-old, but he had broken off one of his G3s. The whole thing was gone, and you know, it was the last day of the season. 30 minutes. I watched him until it was after shooting light, and I'm like, well, nobody else is going to kill him. Let's see what he does at 5 years old. And he really didn't grow much. Like, I thought he had the frame and he had the length to really, like, turn into mid-180s, but he lost a little length, if anything, but he gained mass and a little bit of width. But he's a big, I mean, he's a good deer, great
please,
deer.
Please kill him. Casey, yeah. Please do not. I cannot deal with this. Do not let him go. Please kill him and send me pictures.
If he walks by this time, he's getting it. I guarantee you that.
That's the spirit I like. All right, people can watch for that deer and a whole bunch more of management tips and hunts on online. Once again, where do they go?
TheManagementAdvantage.com, or go to YouTube and search The Management Advantage, also on Facebook and Instagram.
Okay, and so, yeah, the next date he's got with us, we're talking about this buck he's fixing to kill, and then we're going to have our monster trapping show again with Casey. We talk some trapping, as always. Man, I appreciate your time. Best of luck out there. We'll talk soon.
All right, I appreciate it, guys.
All right, coming back to you next week with a story from Casey. All right, we'll be here next week, whether we got a story or not. It's FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.